Support for I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere comes from MX Publishing, with the largest catalog of new Sherlock Holmes books in the world. New novels, biographies, graphic novels, and short story collections about Sherlock Holmes. Find them at mxpublishing.com. And from listeners like you, who support us through Patreon. Bonus material, thank you gifts, and more await at patreon.com/IHearOfSherlock. I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, episode 280, a BSI weekend recap.
I hear of Sherlock everywhere since you became astronomer.
In a world where it's always 1895, it's I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, a podcast for devotees of Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the world's first unofficial consulting detective.
I've heard of you before. You're Holmes the meddler, Holmes the busybody, Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
The game's afoot as we interview authors, editors, creators, and other prominent Sherlockians on various aspects of the great detective in popular culture.
As we go to press, sensational developments have been reported.
So join your hosts, Scott Monty and Bert Wolder, as they talk about what's new in the world of Sherlock Holmes.
You couldn't have come at a better time!
Hello and welcome to I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast for Sherlock Holmes devotees where it's always 1895. I'm Scott Monty.
I'm Bert Wolder.
And Bert.
Yes.
Do you have your recap cap on?
I have my recap cap. Actually, it's a fez. I always wear my recap fez. And sometimes I sign myself when I fill out checks. I always sign them. I like to sign them. Recap Fez. Because people will say to me, what's your name? And I like to say, I'm Fez. Recap Fez. In a few minutes, seconds at the most, I'm usually alone. And I like that.
It's amazing how that happens. Yeah. We don't have enough Fezzes around these days. I know Happy Days, the American sitcom Happy Days, just celebrated its 50th anniversary. And one of the all-time great lines about Fezzes was contained in Happy Days. Of course, Howard was the father of the family there, and he used to go to some lodge meeting, and they had leopard-spotted Fezzes. And as he was prepping to go out, his wife, always looking after his best interests, criticized his fez, saying, Howard, your fez is limp.
Aww. Nothing worse than a limp fez. Well, internationally, you know, the Doctor, played by Matt Smith, Doctor Who, fancied, among other things, a fez. And I remember one of the lines that the Doctor had in that series was, fezes are cool. And they are cool. We need more. I got my fez when... I think they still are popular for the Sons of the Desert, the Laurel and Hardy Society, because it's a nod to one of their great films called Sons of the Desert, when Stan and Ollie are trying to get away. Actually, they do successfully get away, kind of, for a convention of the Sons of the Desert. It's kind of like the old Honeymooners, Jackie Gleason, Ralph Cramden's International Order of Friendly Raccoons. But this is the Sons of the Desert, and they all wore fezzes.
Well, there you go. Well, lest we be straying too far from the world of Sherlock Holmes, there was a fez featured in one of the Granada episodes. I don't know if you remember this.
I do.
It was, I believe, The Empty House. When Watson and Holmes were back in Baker Street once more after apprehending Colonel Sebastian Moran, and Watson popped his fez on as he sat down to smoke a cigar. And I believe that's largely what they were made for. They were smoking hats, much like smoking jackets, to keep the smoke and the smell out of one's clothing and hair.
Well, he didn't do this in an actual case, though. Watson didn't put a fez on in
well,
a
no,
case.
Canonically, there's no fez ever mentioned. Yeah. But
so you mean although, the Granada series did this?
Although, didn't General Gordon, wasn't he featured wearing a fez in that famous portrait on the wall in Baker Street?
Oh, no, no, I don't think so. I think if anyone wore a fez, it would have been one of the younger Sholto brother, Thaddeus.
That would have made sense.
Who, you know, lived in this recreation of Eastern Asia. But I don't know that that's really true. Although I think the Baker Street the Baker Street Irregulars, it suddenly occurs to me, we don't have any customary headgear. I need to get a hold of Monica Schmidt, and we need to do work on the appropriately designed new Baker Street Irregulars fez.
There we go. Well, perfect. So that's a great segue into what we're here to talk about today.
And headgear.
Before we do get into that, let's just pause for a moment and remind people that you can find the show notes for this episode on iHearOfSherlock.com. And of course, right in the comments or notes section of wherever you happen to be listening to us. Make sure you're subscribed to us just so you don't miss a new and upcoming episode. We have a lot of interviews lined up for this year. And, you know, this is, as we do begin season 18, as we like to, at least over the last few years, we're starting this season out just kind of recapping what happened at the BSI weekend, because I think it portends so much for what to expect for the year. We'd also like to remind you that you can support us on Patreon. We would appreciate that kind of support if you would be so kind. For as little as a dollar a month, you can become part of the community here. And for higher levels, you can even participate in receiving a gift, thanks to your generosity. So whatever works for you, however little or much you can afford, we do appreciate it. Ah, so this is where this is where our bio goes, Bert, if we had bios to read. No, we are talking about the BSI weekend this time around. This is the annual gathering for Sherlockians that happens every year in January, somewhere around January 6th, not always on it or near it, but somewhere in the early part of the month. And it's been going on now since 1934. And can you believe it? We're still doing it.
Yes, we are still doing it. And as Christopher Morley said years ago, we are going to keep doing it until we get it right.
There you go. The BSI weekend, it is not only for members of the BSI. It's really for people who are interested in Sherlock Holmes. And there are a number of events that have been open to the public. I think it's just the BSI dinner that is invitation only. The rest, and it really is not a weekend. It began as a single dinner on a Friday evening, but it expanded to start as soon as Wednesday and end as late as Sunday. So there are all kinds of events and goings on and opportunities to meet up with like-minded people or kinsprits, as Christopher Morley calls them, who share this interest in Sherlock Holmes. So we don't want to belabor the entire weekend, but we do want to call out some of the highlights and name some of the things that might be interesting to you and that might portend for what we have to bring you in future episodes. So, Bert, you got in before I did.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. It's a magnet. You know, this date and the Baker Street Irregulars dinner is a magnet for all sorts of other things that are open to anybody and are fertile opportunities for creativity. Like Wednesday afternoon, the Coffee House Club, which is resident at another club at 47th Fifth Avenue, put on a radio play called Flat Finders 1881. And it was very, very funny. It was done with microphones in old-time radio style, people with scripts in their hands, microphones on stands, live sound effects, and anyone who is a devotee of the stories of the cases of Sherlock Holmes will be tickled because there are lots of references in the radio play about that. And the premise is Holmes and Watson have met at Bart's, and unlike A Study in Scarlet, Holmes has not yet does not yet have his eye on a flat in Baker Street. But luckily, Stamford, young Stamford, has a sister. And his sister is a real estate agent. And so Holmes and Watson look at three different houses before they actually stumble upon Baker Street. And it was really very funny. And it was done by a great cast, Leslie Middlebrook, an old acquaintance of mine, played Violet Stamford, young Stamford's sister. Tiffany Ray Knight, our friend from Ash. Tiffany did Foley. She did the sound effects and also did Mrs. Hudson. And, they had a great cast playing Holmes and Watson, creating real characters. And it was a lot of fun. And you wouldn't be surprised to find that they went to other locations that you would recognize in the canon. You know, the realtor, first of all, takes them basically to Upper Swandam Lane and shows them the bar of gold from the Twisted Lip. And they decide that perhaps it's a little too close to the river. And then they go to Caulfield Gardens, you know, which you will recognize as being connected to, I think that's Bruce Partington plans. And until they finally wind up in the empty house, which is unfortunately unfurnished, but they do see a light in the window across the way, and they wind up in Baker Street. But that was a lot of fun.
No, it does sound like a lot of fun. I'm sorry I missed that.
Yeah. Well, Tiffany, too, did among her Foley work. You know, Foley is the sort of shorthand for sound effects. In addition to doing People on the Steps and Clacking Coconuts very successfully for hansom cabs, she also did The Bull Pup, Watson's Bull Pup. And this play answered the question of what happened to Watson's bull pup.
Uh-oh. Mm. Can you spoil it?
Oh, yeah, it was a happy ending.
Oh, good.
Happy ending.
I was worried there for a moment.
Went to a good home.
Okay.
Yeah, Mrs. Hudson doesn't like dogs or cats or birds in her premises.
Understandable.
Yeah. Hudson, by the way, one of her lines is, "Yeah, I once had a tenant. He was a canary trainer." And that, of course, is another reference to an unknown Sherlockian case.
Yeah. How fun.
Yeah.
And Wednesday evening, this is usually an informal kickoff, a kind of a welcome to New York that is hosted by the Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes, Ash. And because it occurs on Wednesday, this is, of course, known as Ash Wednesday. But from what I understand this year, this time around, it was a little more organized, a little more formal.
Hmm. Yeah, it was at the Joyce Public House, and there was, unlike previous years, this was a pay in advance, which made it a lot more convenient than trying to figure out how much your cheeseburger was. But it was a nice menu, too. It was a three-course meal, and I think we must have had, you know, Ira would know, Ira Metetsky and Jen were the moving forces behind this, and you know, they would have an exact number, but I would be surprised if it was not at least, you know, 80 people, if not more than that.
Wow, impressive! And you know, I mean, this is a chance to settle in, get to see old faces and new, and prepare oneself for the weekend ahead. So Thursday rolls around, and now, there really isn't anything formal until Thursday evening with the BSI lecture, but there are a few groups that like to gather in advance, and I think, was the Morley Walk on Friday or on Thursday?
I don't remember.
I think
I haven't done it in a long while.
It happens on Friday, but
I think it was on Friday.
Yeah, I think it was Friday, but we warmed up McSorley's Ale House before then.
Our friend Sean Wright, friend Sean Wright came in from California with his son. Haven't seen him in many years. Great Sherlockian Sean Wright, and we had a little tribute to a departed Sherlockian named John Farrell, who is a wonderful, wonderful guy who's sadly been gone. Certainly at least 3 years.
But John Farrell and Sean Wright together wrote the Sherlock Holmes cookbook. This would have been in the early to mid 1970s, and it was a competitor to Cooking with Sherlock Holmes that Dining with Sherlock Holmes that Julia Rosenblatt and Fritz Sonnenschmidt wrote. And between the two of them, you have your fill of plenty of English cuisine. So we were celebrating the memory of John at this place that Sean remembers going to so many years ago. This is his first time back out here in a while. And it's a charming place. It's been around in existence since 1854. Sawdust on the floor, creaky floorboards, old furniture. They still have the Victorian gaslight hung from the ceiling there, the gaslight chandeliers and old portraits, and I mean it's got this old world charm to it. It's not fancy by any stretch of the imagination. And then the order goes out for what kind of beer you would like, light or dark, and you are brought two at a time. So I applaud their optimism there at McSorley's.
Two small mugs. Yeah, it's a New York institution. I guess that's East 7th Street.
That's right.
So we're still on Thursday. So later on Thursday was the BSI lecture, which was Dr. Tess Gerritsen, an author, a filmmaker. And her topic was very interesting. It was, what did Dr. Watson know? Let's talk a little bit about Victorian medicine. I mean, this was a great period, she said, as a transition between ancient and modern medicine. So what sort of a doctor was Watson? And she relatively quickly came to the conclusion that he must have had medical knowledge pretty similar to that of Arthur Conan Doyle's. And she took us through all of that along with some statistics, some very disturbing statistics about infant mortality and childbed fever and the degree to which people's lives were cut short by procedures and medical events that today have become routine, commonplace, and safe. So yeah, it was quite a talk.
Well, it became, I mean, for those who are not familiar with the world of medicine, you know, medicine in the 1800s and even into the early 1900s was not a very sanitary practice. You know, you had physicians plunging their hands into one patient and, you know, going right over to the other and not washing in between. And that's how disease spreads. And germ theory was in its early days back then. And, you know, you had people like, well, Joseph Bell, certainly at the University of Edinburgh, and one of his compatriots there, Dr. Joseph Lister, who was an early pioneer in germ theory, Louis Pasteur, about the same time. And we are just so fortunate of what we know about medicine now that these pioneers helped pave the way for. But it was grisly and gruesome on the way.
Mm. Do you think that Dr. Lister had halitosis? Do you have any idea about that? Any idea about that? Has that ever occurred to you? I wonder.
Yeah. I have heard that before. I don't know who came up with that.
I don't know either. And, you know, the interesting thing is that the wonderful thing about all of this is the people. You know, it's not the events. It's not like, well, we went here and we went there and we saw this and we saw that and that was funny and blah. It's the people. I was in the lecture in between Dick Sveum, between two doctors, Bob Katz on my right and Dick Sveum on my left. And, of course, our friends here are medical professionals of long standing. And so as Tess Gerritsen is going through her talk, You know, I observed that Dick Sveum is, you know, about 30 seconds ahead of her. He's, you know, he says, you know, carbolic acid. And then sure enough, 20 seconds later, Tess Gerritsen says, you know, and carbolic acid was. And Bob Katz also said something really interesting that I had no idea about. He said, you know, Dr. George Budd's father, and George Budd was a schoolmate at medical school of Conan Doyle. And after medical school, Conan Doyle was hooked up with George Budd to his regret. But Bob pointed out that Dr. George Budd's father discovered that typhoid could be transmitted by water. And I had absolutely no idea about anything to do with George Budd's ancestry, much less that his father was an innovator. And I thought that was very interesting. But that's the point. You know, you meet people and you have great conversations and you learn things that you didn't know.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we learned is that we love oysters. And after the lecture, and this is one of those things that you, as a listener, wherever you happen to live, you can actually take this up on your own as well. A few years ago, Sherlockians started gathering after the lecture, and we peel off and go to, you know, various restaurants around the city and do our own thing. It's kind of find your own way after that. And a group of us went to Grand Central Station. There is an oyster bar there, down a couple of levels, and we decided to have an oyster dinner. And the connection to Sherlock Holmes, there is a story where oysters are mentioned. Sherlock Holmes himself mentions oysters. He was kind of in a hallucinatory state, and he says, "Indeed, I cannot think why the whole bed of the ocean is not one solid mass of oysters. So prolific the creatures seem. And Watson, we've done our part. Shall the world then be overrun by oysters? No, no, horrible. You'll convey all that is in your mind." And so was formed this group known as SPODE, S-P-O-D-E. Sherlockians preventing oysters from destroying the earth. And what's happened is from this event in New York, other groups have been popping up all around the country, all around the world, really. Wherever two or more Sherlockians dine together and consume oysters, well, there's the potential for a new chapter of SPODE. So, again, it's just one of those things where it's an excuse for people to get together and enjoy something together that just happens to intersect with Sherlock Holmes.
Hmm, yeah. And then the next morning, a group of us gathered very early for coffee. We'd all been engaged in the weeks leading up to the weekend in a movie quiz that Bob Katz ran, and we were the participants of that, and that was a lot of fun. And then afterwards on Friday, I mean, there were events, but I did not participate really in any formal events. Well, I did go up to the Grolier Club where there's an exhibition that's starting next week on bookbinding, which is fascinating. This is a club for, it's a very old club, and it's a club for basically book collectors and people who love books. And they also have an exhibition on detective fiction, and it's open to the public. And that was a lot of fun. And then later on, I decided to take myself to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where I spent, a couple of hours. And then on Friday
neither you or I made our way to the Gillette Luncheon.
No,
but that's what we missed. William Gillette Luncheon is something that, again, it cropped up over the years. I think it was first held in the early 1950s, 1951 or so, because Sherlockians had been coming from out of town for this Friday evening BSI dinner, and they thought, well, we're in early, we may as well grab a bite of lunch together. And I think Clifton Andrews from Akron, Ohio, started this. And it has eventually grown over the years. I think over 100, maybe 125 people gather for this lunch. William Gillette, of course, is the honorific by name. And usually there is some sort of theatrical performance. And this year, from the photos, I saw Ashley Polasek and Curtis Armstrong got up on stage. Curtis doing his best Sherlock Holmes, and Ashley, I assume, doing her best Dr. Watson. So it's, again, a friendly and fun kind of thing to while away the afternoon before the evening festivities begin.
And then the evening festivities began with a cocktail hour or so and the toast to the health of the woman who this year was Steve Doyle's wife, Pamela. I think her name is Pamela. But other than that, I don't remember much about the cocktail party. But except for the people that I met and talked with, which were...
That means you must have had quite a few cocktails, I would imagine.
No, actually, I was very good. I had one glass of ice water, so I was
no, good. Okay. Good for you. Well, and concurrently, while this was going on across town, the Gaslight Gala had been resurrected. So for those who were not at the BSI dinner, they had a dinner to go to as well. I hadn't heard specifically what went on there, but from what I understand, it was a very good time. And it had been, you know, with COVID and everything in the past few years, it had kind of gone to ground. So it was lovely to hear that it had been resurrected.
Yeah, absolutely. And that takes us up to the BSI dinner.
Yes.
And there we are.
There we are. And a lovely time it was. And then we kind of said our farewells on Saturday with the big reception in the afternoon. You know, the annual, I think the highlight of that event was Alan Betsy Rosenblatt, as they do, kind of recapping the weekend and recapping the year in Sherlockian verse. And the two of them trade off stanzas, and the audience is just, you know, just marvels at their ability to do this, because they, what they've done is they've taken the events from the dinner and incorporated it into the poem. So they've been working all night on this poem after the dinner, and releasing it to the public on Saturday afternoons. So that was lovely. But I think what is going to presage for us, what we are going to be talking about throughout this year, is some of the treasures that we found that Saturday morning in the vendor's room. This is an opportunity for Sherlockians and publishers and people of all kinds to grab a table and set up their wares and sell them to, well, I guess the unsuspecting and suspecting Sherlockian public.
Yeah, and it's another forum for great creativity, and also folks, you know, many of our friends have extensive collections, more extensive than ours, and when you have an extensive collection, occasionally you'll find you have got one or two or even three of the same item, and the nice part is these things turn up at the dealer's room and you have an opportunity to look at and buy, you know, at very reasonable prices, some things you wouldn't otherwise see. My friend Jules Spada in the dealer's room had something I had never seen before, which is a copy of the, I think that was the Dying Detective, a facsimile of the Dying Detective manuscript, signed by Dame Jean Conan Doyle, Owen Dudley Edwards, and Julian Simmons, the crime writer. And that was really fabulous. And he took that back home with him because that's, you know, quite a pricey little item there.
No, but yeah, I was going to say.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Do you remember how much you wanted for it?
Yes, I do.
And that number is?
Well, I'm not going to say the number because, you know, he may have priced it. I thought it was a significant but not out of the ballpark number at all.
Was it bigger than a bread box?
It was bigger than a bread box.
Okay, that's a lot of dough.
It was 10 bread boxes probably. But I mean, you want to get your good aluminum or stainless steel bread box. It's going to be, you know,
sure.
You got to pay at least 10 bread boxes for that.
Well, one of the things I was happy to see was the fruits of the labor that went into the BSI conference that was held about a year and a half ago. We did episode, I think it was episode 245. You were our man on the street, Bert, at the Sherlock Holmes and the British Empire conference. And as the BSI does with all of its conferences, it produced a book, Proceedings and Papers from this conference held at the Bear Mountain Inn, July 29th to 31st, 2022. And so therein, you can find the papers, the presentations, the visuals that folks used as part of the British Empire conference. So I made sure to pick up a copy of that. That's edited by Ross Davies, our friend Ross.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah. And other publications from the BSI Press include A West Wind, How America and Americans Influenced the Sherlockian Canon. That's edited by Tom Horrocks and Ray Betzner. And it includes a chapter by you.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. I wrote about the first images of Sherlock Holmes in America and how they developed over a period of time. You know, if you ask most people, what did Sherlock Holmes look like in England? People will say, well, Sidney Paget's drawings. And if you say, what did he look like in America? Many people will say, well, he looked like William Gillette as drawn by Frederick Dursteel. But that's not so, really. It took about 10 years. And in that interval, actually more than 10 years, in that interval between his first appearance and the return of Sherlock Holmes, artists all over the country had remarkable renderings of the character, many indicating that they didn't bother to read the text at all. But that was a lot of fun, and it gives you a perspective on the development of Sherlock Holmes as an American icon, you know, more action-oriented, but also gives you a chance to delve into the style of the different illustrators and the emergence and to contrast Steele with Paget, which I had some fun doing. So, yeah, that was a very nice assignment, and I was delighted that Tom and Ray devoted so much space to the illustrations.
Yeah, it was really well done, I thought. And I'm looking forward to reading through the entire volume there, and I would imagine we'll be talking with Tom and Ray at some point before too long.
Good.
Yeah. And then the BSI manuscript series continues. Steve Doyle edited Clutches of a Fiend, which is a facsimile of the original manuscript of the illustrious client. Clutches of a Fiend. I had no idea that Baron Gruner in that one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. See, I we know he collected women, but I had no idea he collected purses as well. Sorry.
First draft was Backpacks of a Fiend, and they didn't like that.
That just doesn't have a ring to it. But I think we'll be trying to get Steve on as well to talk about taking this, and this is particularly a manuscript that's near and dear to him, as he belongs to the illustrious clients of Indianapolis. So it should be an interesting conversation. Speaking of Steve Doyle from Wessex Press, we do have a copy of the Sherlock Holmes Review, the 2023 Sherlockian Annual. Wonderful shot of Jeremy Brett on the cover there as they celebrate 40 years of Granada's Sherlock Holmes. And they've got an interview with looks like with Gus and Luke from the Sherlock Holmes Jeremy Brett podcast.
Hmm.
So lots of, and lots of other things in there as well. So, you know, stuff by Bruce Harris and Ray Betzner, Dan Andreacco. So lots to look through. And in addition from Wes Express, we got some writings of Donald Redmond, the late, great Donald Redmond, and Canonical Cornerstones, Foundational Books of a Sherlockian Library. I think that's going to be an essential read, particularly for people who are newer to the world of Sherlock Holmes, understanding which books they ought to have as part of their collection so they can speak the common tongue of so many other fellow Sherlockians. If you aren't yet signed up for email updates from MX Publishing, well, you're missing out. There are lots of freebies available for fans of MX Publishing that come out regularly. Every Friday, Steve MX sends out Thank Holmes It's Friday. And the latest one has top picks of 2023. If you use the code 2023 at checkout, you'll be able to get a discount on some of these titles. And if you sign up for the email updates, you'll also have access to audio codes for free audiobooks from MX Publishing. Titles like Sherlock Holmes, The Coronet Conspiracy by James Patrick Heatherly, The Selected Cases of Dr. Watson by Martin Daly, and Sherlock Holmes and the Adventure of the Bedeviled Foot by Thomas Kent Miller. Also, you'll be the first to know about new titles as they're released in 2024. Titles like The Devil at Prayers by Elora Lawthorne, Sherlock Holmes and the Barnyard Caper by Danielle Calloway, Sherlock Holmes Eliminate the Impossible by Paula Hammond, and Sherlock Holmes 5 Miles of Country by Gretchen Altabef. Make sure you're signed up for email updates from our friends at MX Publishing. Just go to mxpublishing.com and register today. Well, anything else coming out of the weekend that you can think of or that you'd like to highlight, Bert?
Only happy memories.
Happy memories. Well, always happy memories. And of course, there's a few of us that kind of capped off Saturday evening with our annual trip to an Indian restaurant. We call ourselves the Pondicherry Lodgers. Again, wonderful fellowship, wonderful food, and lots of fun. And I guess the final thing that at least that I picked up coming out of the weekend was clearly, the BSI crud, as we call it. Some sort of respiratory infection. It never fails. This is what happens when you pal around with so many people in closed spaces over a short period of time. The gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, yes.
So I guess, you know, what remains to be seen is where we will turn up next. There is a large, or significant, I should say, Sherlockian conference in Minnesota. This, is it June or July?
July. Sherlock at 50 years of the collection, Sherlock Holmes collection at the university.
That is a celebration worth having. And then, of course, for those who wish to be in Atlanta in April, from April 12th to 14th, 2024, is 221 BCon. I'm not sure how many years they're going on. It has to be at least 10 at this point. But again, very popular event. Hundreds and hundreds of people from all over. They really do a good job at putting together multiple tracks, panels and dealers, and it's really well done. Something for everyone at 221 BCon in Atlanta in April. Well, good.
Very good.
Well, I suppose it's our opportunity now to give something away.
Hooray! Hooray!
Yes, it's time for everyone's favorite Sherlockian quiz show. That's right, it's Canonical Couplets, where we give you two lines of poetry, and you are supposed to give us which Sherlock Holmes story we're talking about. Now, if you remember the last time we were around here, we gave you this clue. In this, alas, the great wrongdoer snatcher quite failed to add a cubit to this stature. Bert.
Yeah.
No, boy. Yeah. Do you know which Sherlock Holmes story we're talking about here?
Oh, of course. That's very easy. That refers to the very rare time when Watson and Holmes dined together. And the poultry entree they ordered was served without stuffing. It's the case Watson called The Adventure of the Empty Grouse.
Oh my gosh, can you believe it? You've done it again.
Oh no.
The Empty Grouse.
Empty Grouse.
Well, your answer is full of it. But it's not full of the correct answer, I'm afraid. So we will turn to our pal, Eric Deckers, who says, I think I've got it, although this puzzle was certainly the hardest one of the year. It's the story about the time Sherlock Holmes traveled to the United States and solved a mystery concerning a flock of murderous poultry in Michigan's capital. It's The Adventure of the Lansing Hens. Oh, Lansing. Wow, that's almost as bad as the grouse.
It's almost. Almost.
And Eric says, except that now that I think about it, that's more likely to have been a pastiche that Scott wrote under a pen name. True. He says, no, it's more likely to be The Adventure of the Dancing Men. Yes, that is correct, Eric. Yes. Dancing Men is what we're looking for. Well, why don't we get to the prize wheel here? And we don't have too many folks to choose from this time around. So it looks like it's going to be a lower number. And I should remind people that, look, even if you've already won, and if you've won recently, we still encourage you to participate. We want people to have fun and try your hand at this. So don't let your previous winnings stop you from re-entering the quiz here. So let's give this a spin and see exactly who and what we come up with here. And it's landing on number 7, and that looks like it is, Carol Berger.
Yay!
Carol, congratulations, and we will be getting to you, a copy of Christian Claver's classified dossier of Sherlock Holmes. I guess you'll have your choice there if you'd like one of his earlier ones, or if you want to wait for the Dorian Gray edition that's coming out in March. So, Carol, we'll be in touch with that. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Well, this time around, we will have something that we brought home from the BSI weekend. Or if it's somebody who did go to the BSI weekend, don't worry about it. We'll pull something else out of the vault. We'll have something fun for you either way. But this is the clue you need to solve. When an old man's desire makes him climb a tree, Holmes thinks, you can't make a monkey out of me. If you know the answer to this canonical couplet, put it in an email addressed to comment@ihearofsherlock.com with canonical couplet in the subject line. If your answer is correct and we choose you at random, you'll win. Good luck. Whew. Good luck indeed. Always fun. So we'll be back here at the end of the month. I think we'll have an exciting interview for you. Well, I know it'll be an exciting interview, but I'm thinking about who it is. I know who it is. Can't tell you just yet, but it's worth the wait. Definitely fabulous. Worth the wait. Yes.
Why plan on being here?
Oh, good. Well, that's good.
Yeah. I'm intrigued. Want to find out.
As you should be. You know what? Before we sign off and get all wistful, I think there are a couple of items that we might want to cover in the news. Sherlockian news. We'll do what we can to fit the Sherlockian news here. So while we were wandering around the vendor's room, Bob Hess was there handing out a card. It's one I received in the mail. Potter and Potter Auctions, A Study in Sherlock, Part 2, including the collections of Robert Hess and Roy Pilot. Roy Pilot is a longtime BSI out here in Michigan. And Bob Hess is a longtime collector and vendor, dealer. And there will be a number of items, including the only known copy of The Lost World in the original dust jacket. So first edition Lost World, and it's estimated to go for $8,000. I'll bet it'll go for more than that. I have my suspicions at this point. I say, High Spots will include the only known copy of the first English edition of The Lost World in original dust jacket and, oh, get this, Bert, Sidney Paget's personal robe.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Yeah. Second half of the sale will include Roy Pilot's library, which is highlighted with perhaps the only autographed manuscript remaining in private hands of a major Doyle work. It's the manuscript for Uncle Bernac. So that'll bring a pretty penny, no doubt.
Yeah.
We'll have a link to the Potter and Potter website so you can check that out. You can also order a copy of the auction catalog from them for $35. I don't know how many people are aware that many of these auctions do have catalogs available for sale, and the catalogs themselves are usually so well done that even if you can't afford anything from the auction, getting the catalog is something worthwhile.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. What else is newsworthy from your perspective, Bert?
Well, I can't think of, I mean, we've mentioned some of the conferences that I'm certainly looking forward to. There'll be more Scion Society meetings and a great many books coming out. You know, we've, I did have on the back, in the back of my mind, a list of some of the books that are coming out in March. I think from the Wessex Press, I think there's a, an annotated version of a talk that Conan Doyle gave on the art of storytelling, which accompanied by other essays, which sounds very interesting to me. But it's going to be a busy year in Sherlockian publishing. You know, our friends at MX Publishing continue to put out an enormous number of new Sherlock Holmes works. And our friend Derek Belanger, too. You know, Derek... we had an opportunity to pick up a copy of, what was it? Reading Holmes or Writing Holmes? He's got, you know, there are more coming out from Derek's publishing house, but a variety of things. Scion meetings, concerts, plays, somewhere every night in the United States, across the country, there is a play by Ken Ludwig that is running. There's never a day during the course of the year where somewhere, someplace, a play by Ken's is not running. And of course, you know, a number of them involve Sherlockian themes. So there's plenty happening.
He's like the I Love Lucy of playwrights. And speaking of being on every night, not that this was going to be on every night, but CBS has greenlit a new series, a new drama series, starring Morris Chestnut as Dr. John Watson. I think it's simply being called Watson. And it's a contemporary story set a year after the death of Sherlock Holmes at the hands of Moriarty. It seems like it's kind of something in parallel to Elementary. And we have reached out to the series creator, Craig Sweeney, to see if we can get him on the show. He's going to be the showrunner and executive producer. And we're going to try and get him on to talk about that, as the show is expected to air sometime later this year during the 2024-25 broadcast season. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, really does. So plenty of you. And of course, you mentioned our friends at MX Publishing. We will be sure to have some MX authors on the show as well, talking about some of their unique and different takes on Sherlock Holmes, whether it's investigative or entertainment or pastiche. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that wraps up the news, and I think it also wraps up the show. So here we are, off into 2024. Pleasure to be doing this with you once again, my friend.
Well, it's a pleasure to be doing it with you, too.
Can't think of anyone else I'd rather be on the microphone with.
Oh, me neither.
Well, and then I guess until next time, I remain the mic'd up Scott Monty.
And I'm the completely untethered Burt Wolder.
And together... we say
the games.
Afoot.
the games afoot.
You know, I'm afraid that in the pleasure of this conversation, I'm neglecting business of importance, which awaits me elsewhere.
Thank you for listening. Please be sure to join us again for the next episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast dedicated to Sherlock Holmes.
Goodbye, and good luck, and believe me to be, my dear fellow, very sincerely yours, Sherlock Holmes.